Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with your editor and publisher, Kevin Longquist. And Kevin, Baylor just picked up a Johnny Carter, beat out some pretty good competition to get it. Why is a guy that's transferring from a G5 to a P5, why is he such a big deal?
Well, he's a big deal for a couple of reasons. Number one, he's a Texas kid. He played high school ball at Galena Park North Shore. So the attraction of coming back home to play his final year of eligibility in Texas and specifically at Baylor is appealing. Secondly, the Bears are getting a kid who is a playmaker, guy that can turn people over. Multiple interceptions in his career, multiple fumbles either forced or recovered in his career. So you have a guy who has the ability to create plays from that perspective, which is something that Baylor's defense really lacked in 2022. And I think the other thing is that when you get a guy like this, I expect him to be the number one corner for this team. I really do. I mean, I think that's kind of speaks to where Baylor's secondary is at in terms of the development of the younger corners who I just don't view as being ready yet. And more than likely the Baylor coaches feel the same way, or else they wouldn't have pursued him as hard as they did. I know they pretty much rolled out the red carpet for him, NIL stuff notwithstanding, but they rolled out the red carpet for him when he visited between May 5th and May 7th. Then he took his other two visits to Penn State and BYU. And what's important to note there is I think from that standpoint that he put together a resume and a history for himself that made him marketable. And I think a guy that comes from a G5 program like he is from Utah State, Utah State's played some pretty good football over the last couple of years. They were in the Mountain West Conference Championship game a couple of years ago, and he was a starter on that team. So you look at that, and if Baylor's beating out other P5 programs like Indiana, Penn State, BYU to get him, then that tells you that nobody was really worried about him stepping up and moving from G5 ball to P5 ball. I will argue that the Mountain West Conference, which is what Utah State is in, they share that with San Diego State, Colorado State, Air Force, those folks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty solid level of football there, that G5 league there. But anyway, my sense is, but they weren't concerned about that. None of those programs were. But for Baylor to win this, it just speaks to their, they've got to get some help back there. And Isaiah Dunson, the Miami transfer who came in in January and went through spring ball, that's great. But he doesn't have much of a history behind him. And Carter does. And I think that makes a big difference in terms of how you want to play this with him, with Carter, because if Baylor really focused that hard on him to land him, that tells you that they really need some sort of veteran presence back there. Dunson doesn't have that. He has some experience and he has a pretty good high school rating, but this is a big step up for them.
It's a big step up for them, and particularly you know that they're wanting him to plug in immediately because he's got 1 year left, so it's not like they're planning on grooming him into a position.
Right, and the fact that they need him at corner again, like I said, and I think he's going to get matched up against the opposing team's number one receiver. I really do. That's how I feel about this because, look, Baylor's defense, for as many unknowns as it has with its defensive line, and we'll get to these transfers in here in a moment, but just basically at all three levels, the fact that they've been able to plug these gaps, if you will, with veteran types of guys in there or guys who have been around the block in the P5 game and are switching over or coming up or something along those lines, I think they'd like to think that they've been able to stem the tide because so many questions about this team going into the 2023 season.
Yeah, and this is something that, you know, we've talked about it in previous podcasts, but this is not unique to Baylor. The whole NIL and the transfer portal becoming so much more wide open, you've got a lot of teams that they're going to be turning over half their roster.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, we were talking about on the offensive line with the Barrington brothers that, you know, those guys have to learn not just to play, but to play as a team.
Right.
So that creates a ton of unknowns for everybody, not just Baylor.
Yeah, I think from the standpoint of Carter, is coverage is press coverage is the same no matter where you play, whether it's at Baylor or Utah State or Penn State or Indiana or BYU. It's just all about the terminology. And it's all about mechanical things. Like if Matthew Pollage sees something in his footwork or his hips that he can tweak to give him that slight advantage over the receiver on 50-50 balls or just coverage itself, that's really all it's about. And, you know, they can get into the nuances of disguising coverages and things of that nature. But press coverage is press coverage. Man coverage is man coverage. Zone coverage is zone coverage. Again, it's just about the terminology.
All right, so if we take a look at the portal right now, Baylor's picked up quite a few players in the portal, and you believe, if I'm reading you right, you think that Carter is the best pickup they've gotten.
Yeah, and I felt like between, and I rated Carter as the number one portal addition this spring, but I actually would call him maybe the number one addition to all 11 that Baylor's brought in between January and now. And I would say maybe a close second and third, or the top three, if you will, overall, would be Carter, then Keetron Jackson, and then maybe Mike Smith as the linebacker. We'll see about the defensive lineman here in a minute. But my feeling here is that Baylor needs a little bit more known quantities, if you will, between corner, a playmaking wide receiver, and somebody who has productivity in the middle of the defense. And that's where those three come in and will make a big difference, or are expected to. I mean, all three of these guys are expected to start, contribute, make an impact. That's why they were brought here. But I think in Carter's case, you just need that lockdown corner, that guy that has the ability to take away one side of the field or limit one side of the field for opposing. I mean, he's going to get tested. We know that. And he'll get tested more than likely. If it's not so much against Texas State in the opener, it's going to be September 9th when the Bears play Utah. And I think that's going to be but I think if he shows that he can do exactly what they expect him to do, then that really takes the pressure off. And then Baylor's going to have to really help the other corner, whoever that's going to be.
Yeah. Now, one of the guys that I think could be significant for them is the defensive lineman out of Oregon. Okay.
Yeah, sure. And,
yeah. And the reason for that is he's got the size. Baylor, with Ika leaving, Baylor really does not have a classic nose tackle anymore in there. And they need somebody that can be an impact lineman. And he's been in every Oregon game for the last 2 years. So he's played a P5 schedule.
He has, yeah. He's been in the Pac-12, and Trevon Mayha, I know I'm not saying his last name right, but anyway. But the point is that, yeah, and with his size, about 6'5", oh, let's just split the difference, 280, because I've seen too many different weights thrown about him, and we know what rosters and weights and heights are, but whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, but if you look at him and you say, okay, we're going to go ahead and push and see if we can put him at the nose. And that's a 6'5 defensive tackle or nose guard, a little bit tougher to play that because of the fact that you've got to get really, really low. And that's why your most effective nose guards are going to be about 6'1 and 6', maybe even 5'11, because they got a lower center of gravity. They don't have as many pieces, parts to move around, you know, that sort of thing. But I think, and that's why I even suggested, and I have no way of knowing this, but it wouldn't surprise me if Baylor, once he gets on campus and once they get going in fall camp in late July, early August, whenever that starts, is going to be, do they want to look at him at defensive end? Because he's got the height for it, 6'5". Mm-hmm. And if that weight, I mean, the one thing is about this is it's position flexibility. I think in today's football, Stephen, we don't want to get, players are not going to get so locked into playing one position. How many times have we heard offensive linemen say, well, I can play guard, center, and tackle. Why? Mm-hmm. Because they need to be flexible, because they show that they can handle all the blocking assignments, especially if somebody gets hurt. You can't get pigeonholed into one position, because if you're a tackle, you've been trained to play a tackle, and that's all you are. And then if your guard gets hurt and you can't play it because you haven't played it or gone through the reps to play it, you're going to be fish out of water and you're going to look bad doing it. So I think from that standpoint with Trevin, I think Baylor would serve itself to at least look at him at defensive end to see, can he do this?
Well, you know, that's something that, like, Bryles, when he was here, like, his players knew their assignment, and that was what they knew. Rule did a complete 180 on that, and he expected them to know every assignment everywhere. And he was really ahead of the curve in having guys play multiple positions, because that guy, sometimes it felt like he was, you know, playing fantasy football. He was just moving guys all over the place, all the time. Now, I don't see that as much with Aranda. They've made a couple of moves, but yeah, particularly within a position group, you got to be able, you know, like offensive line, you've got to be able to play multiple positions. And on defensive line, and particularly now, so many of your linebacker slots are playing with their hand on the ground in about a third of the plays.
Well, sure. And think about it this way, too. You have so many defensive formation looks, because the defense has to – offense has been leading the charge in this game for many, many years, and it's always been the defense that has tried to play catch-up because they have to make the adjustments. So what do you need? You need players who are athletic enough so that they can play multiple positions if you need them to. And think about the different formations that you can throw out there. You can go your traditional two fronts. You have your odd front of a 3-4 or 4-3. You have your 50 front. Then you have your stack, which is a 3-3-5.
And then you have
the 4-2-5. And so where you play primarily nickel coverage, which is what Baylor generally does more. You know, Baylor's kind of like that. You know, I would call Baylor more like a 3-4, like a 3-4-4, you know, but with the interchangeableness of this. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I 3-3-4, you know, they're kind of a stack because they like that nickel back on there, but they want the flexibility of, like, the jack position, the linebacker who can you know, sneak up there and put a hand on the ground and play defensive end. So they'll just kind of go back and forth on this. And so that's where guys like, you know, Trevin and then Byron Bonds, the other transfer that we've gotten, it's been a month since he actually announced his transfer. But, you know, you look at him and you say, okay, that's another guy that you can add in there for depth. And that's the other thing, too. Not only are you bringing these guys in there to be starters, but you got to get real depth in there, too. And I don't know what Bonds' future is going to be for them, but he's going to have, you know, he's going to be in a situation where he has to, you know, Vons is in a situation where he has to be in a position where he can provide that leadership and, again, the depth that they need, that sort of thing. That's going to be critical for them because of the question marks surrounding the defensive front.
Well, if Vons doesn't do anything else, I will just absolutely guarantee you that Carter called Vons and asked him about Baylor.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I could – you would see that happen. I mean, it would make a lot of sense. Both Texas kids, both kids that now, Carter is a lifelong Utah State kid. Vons committed or came from Texas to Utah State, and both know each other very well. And so they get to play their final years there. I mean, because Vons has 1 year, and so does Carter. So they're both going to leave. They're going to leave at the same time. But again, you know, I don't know if this is enough for Baylor to really push toward the first division of the Big 12 title race, but at least it gives them the opportunity to be a part of the race. And then, of course, it'll depend on what kind of level of execution you get from your quarterback, whoever that is.
Yeah, now, if we move on to basketball, you are looking at status on Jalen Bridges and Adam Flagler. I think you said we don't know on Bridges, and Flagler looks like he's out of here.
Yeah, I think Flagler's gone. Although, you know, we talked about this originally when Flagler announced that he was declaring for the NBA draft, but he didn't make it sound like he was for sure out of here. But I think the Baylor coaching staff totally expects him to not return unless something odd happens. Now, in Jalen Bridges' case, he's a guy that, you know, he started off really slow and then had a really great run through the Big 12 season. I think he was, in double figures, maybe 13 of the 18 conference games, and was pretty good in the postseason. I think he was really good in the game against Iowa State. I think he had the career high 28 points against Iowa State in the Big 12 tournament. He was outstanding in that game. But he is projected as a second round draft choice. Well, as we've discussed, second round draft choices are guys that don't get guaranteed contracts, and they better work their tails off to make the NBA roster, because if they don't, then they're going to slide into the NBA's G League, or they're going to have to go overseas. Maybe that's what Bridges wants to do. Maybe he's like, I'm done with this. But we'll know by May 31st what his decision is going to be, if he's going to come back. I've felt all along that Bridges is going to come back. I really do. I would be surprised if he decides. I really would be surprised if he decides to stay in it. But stranger things have happened.
Well, when guys start seeing, and I know that with NIL money, that sometimes guys may make them hang around a little bit longer in college. But when you start looking at pro-level money, it's kind of hard to turn away from that.
Depending on what it looks like. Again, I would think that whatever G, you know, because those G League contracts don't pay a ton, but they're enough so that you can sustain yourself for a while. But again, but if you don't play well in the G League, you're going to get cut, and then your career's over, essentially. So those are the things that Jalen has to weigh as he's going through, you know, the NBA Combine, which is taking place this week. So this is going to be a telltale sign for what happens here with Bridges and where he stands. And then just getting back to point on Flagler, look, he's done yeoman's work for Baylor in his time, in his, what, three seasons here. And I think he probably looks at this and says, when people just kind of look around and say, you know what, I'm just kind of done. And so I think we've all felt like that. I know I felt like that and do feel like that at times. But I think that's where Adam is, and I think he probably feels like, I'm just ready to do something different. I've gotten as much out of my Baylor career as I could possibly ask. I've been a part of two conference championships. I'm wearing a national championship ring. Pretty good run.
And then we also have Toledo transfer Ray J. Dennis visited Baylor on Mother's Day.
That's the word, and they're looking at him, and if he was the MAC player of the year in 22-23, had an outstanding season for the Rockets that got to the, I think, the NIT. They lost to Michigan in the first round. I think they were actually regular season champions of the MAC, and then they lost in the MAC championship game. But, you know, he's a guy, but if you look at, he's a great scorer, and he might be that guy. If Baylor really feels like Flagler's not going to come back, I think that's the guy that takes Flagler's spot. And if you look at his shooting numbers, really solid, but look at how his scoring jumped up, because he was, I mean, everything in his career, the trajectory was going up. He went from 5 points, then I think to 9, then 12 points a game in 21-22, and then 19 points a game this past season, to where he earned those Mid-American Conference honors. And so this is a tussle, because apparently he had also visited Michigan and Illinois out of the Big Ten. And this is one of the big players left on the transfer portal board for basketball. And if Baylor finds a way to pick him off and get him, would be a huge addition to this class beyond the four incoming transfers, with Jaden Nunn, the VCU transfer, of course, Miro Little and Jacoby Walter, and then Yves Missi, who just reclassified from 24 to 23.
What do you see as the chances on him?
I would say Baylor's probably got a 50-50 shot to get him. I mean, I don't really know the landscape in terms of, you know, how Baylor stacks up against Michigan and Illinois. Of course, Michigan didn't make the NCAA tournament last year. They got to the NIT. Illinois did make the NCAA tournament, but was knocked out in the first round by Arkansas. You know, and Baylor's history is what it is. And of course, Scott Drew has done a great – one thing that we always know about Scott Drew in his coaching career, basically from the start of his tenure here throughout it all, is that he does a great job of developing players. And that's why Baylor's got so many guys roaming around in the pro leagues, whether it's the NBA, the G League overseas, or anything like that, because Scott does a great job of developing players. And I think that's probably what is why I think Baylor's got a better than zero chance to get him.
If we move on to baseball – we talked about it off the podcast, but you were very concerned about Mitch Thompson coming in as the head coach. You were concerned about having a JUCO guy come in to try to take over a P5 program. It just felt like it was a really big jump. And he did win a national championship at JUCO. But when you start hitting this level of baseball, it is just a different level of ball.
It is. And I'm okay. So here's the reality. We know Baylor's going to finish with, at the very most, 20 wins. They just won at Tarleton State Tuesday night. They finish up the season Thursday through Saturday against Cal State Bakersfield. They sweep that series. They finish their season at 20-35. Okay. But they finished the Big 12 play last week at 6-18. They just got swept by TCU to end the conference season. They're missing the Big 12 tournament for the first time in program history. And frankly, and it's been talked about the fact that there was a mass exodus of players, okay? But I will remind people of this. Mitch Thompson arrived basically about the same time that other coaches were arriving at their schools when there were changes in that part of the coaching carousel at the Division I baseball level, okay? And if Mitch was known for being a really good recruiter at McClellan and then serving as Steve Smith's right-hand man when Mitch was here at Baylor previously before he got the head coaching job. And so my point is that he's in a state, he's literally right in the middle of a state, which is a hotbed for baseball talent, okay? We all understand that. And so whether or not you want to just say, well, you had to write off this year because the mass exodus, you know, a guy like Trey Richardson, who was their one of their best players, and he wound up going north to TCU to play for the Horned Frogs this year, and other players that left. And I said, I get all that. There was going to be roster turnover. We all were expecting that. But for this program to sink to this level to where it misses the Big 12 tournament and to barely – maybe not, reach 20 wins in a season in that first year, it's not acceptable. It's just not. And, you know, whatever they recruited out of the high school level or the JUCO ranks to get to try and get this program going, there has to be a major jump next year. Okay, let's just say for the sake of discussion that Baylor wins 2 out of 3 against Bakersfield. Okay, so that's going to have their season finish at 19-36. It's basically a winning percentage of .333. Okay, it makes you feel like you did. It was just like a real rock, like a kick to the stomach. Okay, but next year, this team better be in the mid 20 win range, like around 26, 27. It better have a .500 conference record, and it better be no worse than sixth in the Big 12 standings next year. I mean, if Mitch Thompson is the guy, the recruiter, the developer that everyone believes he is, and he has that history to him to suggest that, so that's where he gets the benefit of the doubt, there better be a major jump in the 2024 season. Because if it's not, this thing's going to be in a lot of trouble, and we're going to learn that Mitch Thompson's not the right guy for the job.
On that happy note,
that's the way to. But anyway, we'll continue to monitor as we close this down. We'll continue to monitor any kids' official visits. I'm still tracking those when guys are sending their official visits. You should start to see those come that second weekend in June, like the 9th, 10th, and 11th, something like that. They're going to run through all the way through June. We should tell you too, if you haven't seen it on the board, that the rest of the 2023 class will arrive Memorial Day weekend. Look for the date of Saturday, May 27th. That's your day. And we'll keep you updated on this series that I'm doing on all the players, on all the positions. And we'll keep that series moving forward on Friday and into next week. And then eventually, Stephen will have his chart on all the depth chart so that everyone can get a visual as to how that looks like. Good luck with that, Stephen, by the way. And we will talk to you all next week on the Sick and the Sportscast.